All right. So, is it okay if we first start with a brief introduction of who you are and the work that you currently do?
Sure. I am Hayden Gates. I actually currently work for Home Depot as an assistant manager. And I'm trying to actually get into any of the LGBT groups up here so that I can kind of continue some of the work that I did in Mississippi. It's a little harder in bigger areas because more people are actually a little bit more educated and open to different cultures, different people. So it's a little bit harder to get in up here. But I'm trying to get in with some of the groups and stuff up here so I can actually continue what I did in Mississippi.
Okay. And well, can you talk a little bit about that work that you've done in Mississippi?
I started out doing kind of speeches telling my story of how I came out as transgender and my transition journey and everything with PFLAG in Tupelo, Mississippi. And then I did the Tupelo group, and then I also talked with the Oxford PFLAG and kind of told my story. Got people coming in, asking questions, which was fantastic. Then I did Give Hate a Holiday, which was a an event that was started by Amanda Daniels, who runs the Tupelo PFLAG group. And she invited me to come and speak and tell my story. And we actually got a lot of younger LGBT people there that wanted to ask questions about transitioning, how they could get started and all that, which was kind of the point of it all, to kind of help people understand that there are other people out there. Because when I was growing up, there was no resources, there was nothing, so to be able to help other people was fantastic. And Amy's mother actually came to Give Hate a Holiday. And I was also friends with a woman named Vicky, who went to the Unitarian Church there in Tupelo. And she asked me to speak there. And then Rhonda, Amy's mom, approached me and put me in touch with Amy. She's like, my daughter would probably love to talk to you. So she put me in touch with Amy. And then from there, Amy, we just set up different me doing telling my story to a few of her classes, allowing them. I had to be open to whatever questions they asked, no matter how embarrassing or how I didn't want to talk about them, because I told them at the beginning, I'm going to be completely 100% honest and open, and you can ask me anything you want to ask me. So they asked fantastic questions, and I think we got people's mind changed. And one of the groups, somebody actually got up and walked out, which was disheartening, but it was also, I kind of expected it. So, because when I started transitioning, I got hung up on a lot trying to find doctors and therapists and all that stuff. So then after the Give Hate a Holiday, I did the few speaking engagements with Amy's classes. And then we moved to New York, Rochester, New York, my wife and I, and couldn't really get into anything up there because every time I tried to get in touch with people, I couldn't get any responses or anything. I tried reaching out several times to people and I just couldn't get in touch with anybody. So here, we were only here for a little while before COVID hit, so I haven't really been able to get with anybody here. So I'm hoping after COVID passes that I can actually get start some meetings with some of the local groups and get involved with maybe helping LGBT youth or something. So
And where are you again?
I currently live in Apple Valley, Minnesota, which is right outside of Minneapolis.
Okay. So
Yeah.
you are far.
Yeah, pretty far. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I know you said you work at Lowe's and you're in management, correct?
Home Depot.
Oh,
Home
look at
Depot.
me. I'm so sorry. I'm just getting the where the places mixed up. Home Depot, yes. So how have your experiences been working for them? Are they aware that you're transgender or okay?
Every store that I've worked at, this is my fourth store. I've come out to the store manager and then kind of spread out throughout the store and kind of let people know my story and, you know, that I'm transgender. My first store, which was in Tupelo, I was there for 9.5 years. I was kind of yanked out of the closet there. So my brother actually called. When I started with Home Depot, I'd already started my transition. So I've been with Home Depot 13 years and I've been transitioning for going on 16 years. My brother, my adopted brother, actually called Home Depot one day and said that he saw me go into the men's room and he knows for a fact I was born female. And he talked to one of the assistant managers, and then they, of course, had to take it to the store manager. And the store manager pulled me back and said that I would have to leave Home Depot's property when I needed to go to the bathroom because until I had surgery, I couldn't use the men's room. And I'm like, well, that's stupid. I'm not going to leave the property because what if I go next door? Well, there was a gas station like literally right next door, but you had to leave Home Depot's property to go there. I'm like, I'm not going to leave the property to go to the bathroom because if I go across there, I'm still clocked in. I get hit by a truck. Guess who's liable? So I'm like, I'm not going to put them in that situation. I'm not going to put me in that situation. So I pretty much held it the whole time I was at work. Unless he wasn't there and I would sneak in to go to the bathroom. But I don't think he wasn't being hateful or anything. He was just trying to follow the policy. So, I mean, it wasn't like, and the assistant manager who my brother called in and talked to was extremely nice about it. And later he actually became the store manager. And I told him, I was like, you know, this is who I am. And this is, I'm not going in the women's room to use the bathroom. He's like, as you shouldn't. He's like, you use the bathroom that you feel comfortable in. And I'm like, well, that's the men's room. And even he would be in there sometimes when I would go in there, never said anything, never treated me any differently. When I went to the New York store, when I told the manager, because I ended up having to have my hysterectomy in New York because I had the years and years of being on testosterone and not having a hysterectomy. I had fibroids, so I ended up having to have a hysterectomy pretty quick. And I told my store manager what the deal was, and he was telling me about his wife. So, I mean, he was extremely friendly. No one that I've come out to at Home Depot has ever treated me any differently. So, I've not really had, and like I said, my store manager at the beginning, he wasn't being hateful or mean or anything like that. He was just trying to follow the store policy or the company policy. So, I mean, it wasn't a hateful thing. So yeah, I haven't really had any bad experiences with work or anyone I've talked to or anyone I've told. Everyone's always shocked, which is kind of the point behind taking testosterone. So, I've never had any bad experiences with work. The only thing I had bad experiences with was before I even started trying to find doctors.
So I want to go back to, I want to stay there, but I did want to go back to when you were what and do you remember what year frame you were in working at the one in Tupelo or what around what time that was?
When he talked to me, This would have been.
Well, just when you were I know you said you were there for about 9 years. Like, what was that time frame as far as years?
So I started with Home Depot in 2008. Yeah, because this is my 13th year. So 2008, I started April of 2008.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted an idea of what the air was, you know, just in general.
Yeah, it was 2008 when I started there. And this was probably too late 2008 when that happened.
Okay. So I know you mentioned that you had a lot of like negative experiences, or you struggled with trying to find doctors and therapists and that kind of thing. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So when I first figured out, my wife is actually the one who let me know that I was transgender, because she actually had a transgender friend who transitioned in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And she would talk to him about, you know, me and what I was saying to her. And he's like, yeah, she's trans. Yeah. So then I talked to him, and it was like the curtains opened up and the sun came in. You know, it was very awesome that there was someone else in the world who felt like me. So from there, actually, there was another guy who actually tried to contact me on, you probably don't remember, Yahoo Messenger back in the day, was what everybody used to use. So he kept trying to message me on there. I ended up getting with him, but I thought he was a sex bot because of his email name. It was Make You Squirm. He was a cop, so he was going to make you squirm because he was a cop. And I'm like, that's a really bad name because you sound like a sex bot. Him and I got together, went to a group in Memphis, and met another transgender male to female. And she was telling us about a doctor there. So his requirements is you had to have therapy. So you had to have a letter from your therapist. So I went home, started calling therapists to see if I could get a psychologist, see if I could find someone who could write me my letter. I got hung up on several times. As soon as I told them, this is what I'm looking for. You know, I need someone to write a letter for me to start transition from female to male. I'm transgender. And I get hung up on. I got told that we don't serve your kind here a couple of times. I got very frustrated and like, this is never going to happen because I can't find a therapist. I don't know what I'm going to do. And then I had a friend who was seeing a therapist at the regional mental health that they have all over the South, or in Mississippi, I know. They have three regions. And she's like, you should really try going to see this therapist. So I'm like, I just don't know if I want to try it again, because I've been hung up on, I've been told, you know, I don't serve your kind, you know, it was just disheartening. So I'm like, you know what, I really want to start transition. So I got in touch with her. I set an appointment and went in to see her. And as soon as I walked in the door, I'm like, if this is not going to work, tell me now, I'll pay my fee and then I'll go home, because I can't do this again. I was like, I need you to write a letter for me so that I can start taking testosterone. And she knew nothing about transgender anything, but she was willing to learn, which was fantastic. So I'm like, so if you're willing to learn, I'm willing to teach you. So I went home, and back then it was called Harry Benjamin Standards of Care. So I printed that out, took it in to her, took her in some other resources to where she could do some research and everything. And I ended up having to do a year basically living as male, even though I wasn't transitioned yet. I had to, because you had to have, back then you had to have the year of real life experience before they could write your letter and everything. So, which I was already like super masculine. So, I mean, it wasn't that big of a deal, but when I introduced myself to new people, I had to introduce myself as a male and all that stuff. So, and then probably took about 2 years before I actually, before she wrote my letter and I started taking tea. But she was the first person in the South, doctor wise, that I felt comfortable with. Because she was open to learn about, you know, me and the transgender community. And it was just, it was awesome to see someone else who was in the South who wanted to actually learn about that. So, so after all of the bad stuff, there was light at the end of the tunnel for her. So,
okay. So transitioning kind of to coming back to Mississippi, can you tell me a little bit about the place you grew up?
So I grew up in Ripley. I'm adopted. Okay. So I grew up kind of all over the place before I was adopted when I was 12, and I was put with a family that adopted me when I was 9. So I was taken away from my biological family when I was 6, and kind of spent a few years kind of bouncing foster home to foster home. So my adoptive family, so they used and abused me, and my mom actually admitted it later on in life that, you know, she apologized for basically treating me like their slave. I cooked, I cleaned, I mowed, I did all the housework, I did everything. I took care of my kid brother, you know, I did absolutely everything. It was like I had to clean the house before I could actually go do anything with my friends or anything. I was not allowed to, I would had basically had 2 hours on Friday night that I could go out with my friends. Mm-hmm. And then I had to be back in. So, I mean, it was like, it was, she's apologized because they just treated me so much like that I was not allowed to do anything. And I always got the brunt of beatings and stuff. So, but once I moved out, I decided to move out with them when I was 17. And they didn't hold me back, even though they could have, because legally they owned me because they adopted me. And I don't know if you know anything about the adoption system in Mississippi, but I was, so from the age of 6 to 9, oh, well, from the age of 6 to 12, I was basically a ward of the state. So the state owned me. They could put me wherever they wanted to put me, with whoever they wanted to put me with. And there were some homes that I got molested in. There were homes that I got, you know, excessively beat in, because people wanted the money for fostering. So, and at first, I don't know if that's what my adoptive parents were looking for, and then they decided to adopt me. I don't know what the deal was, but growing up was a little tougher with them, because I had a lot of mental abuse from them.
Okay.
So, but when I moved out, I became an alcoholic. Actually, I became an alcoholic before I moved out. That took me a while to come to terms with. Started drinking when I was like 15, stopped when I was 23. So did a lot of heavy drinking. just to push down, you know, feelings and, you know, stuff from childhood and all that stuff. So growing up was a little tougher, but growing up that way also made me a better person, I think. So made me a stronger person.
Okay. So in Ripley, in all of the different places that you, we can actually just stay where we are. What did your parents do, your adoptive parents do for a living when you were growing up?
My mom was a beautician. She had her own beauty shop out behind the house. And before we actually moved in, before she had her own house, she would work for a beauty shop, local beauty shops. And my dad worked for the city.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay. And I know you talked about, you know, it was tough and it was kind of an abusive situation. How has your relationship changed with them at all since now that you're an adult?
So. my dad has passed, and my mom tried to contact me actually at work. And she wrote me this big long letter after I came out to her at 19. She's Pentecostal, so if you know anything about the Pentecostal religion, they're strictly to the Bible, to the T, nothing changes, you know. So she wrote me this letter saying that I was going to hell, and that she's glad that everybody knew that I was adopted. I wasn't really theirs. And then probably about 7 or 8 years ago, probably about 6 years ago, because we've been gone, yeah, probably about roughly 6 years ago. She called me at work and was crying, saying that God had been whipping her all these years because of how bad she treated me, and that she wanted to apologize, that, you know, how badly they treated me when I was a kid, and how, you know, how she turned her back on me and all this stuff. So I was so upset, I ended up leaving work that day and going home so that I could call her back and talk to her. So, because I had felt like I'd already dealt with that. And when I started telling her about how I felt, because I was always a tomboy, I was always the one to climb the trees, to jump off the top of the barn into the stack of leaves, or, you know, jump in the first mud hole. I was always that tomboy. I never, never, ever felt like a girl. I wanted to learn how to shoot and, you know, whatever. You know, so I was never, ever the girl. And I was the only girl in the family because I had three brothers and then there was me. So I was not what she ended up wanting because I wasn't a girl, you know. So not that she didn't want me, but I don't think it was what they expected. I was very much tomboy. I played football with my brothers, you know, so, but anyway, so we talked for probably about an hour to hour and a half when I got home that day. And she's like, you know, it kind of all makes sense on you transition, are you becoming who you are? Because of when I look back now, it makes sense that you never wanted to play with anything, girl. You never, as soon as you got a dress on, you got it dirty, you know, because you didn't want to be in it. She was like, so she would never cut my hair as short as I wanted it. She always wanted me to keep these, you've seen 80 pictures of the high hair and shit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she always kept my hair like that. And I'm like, this drives me nuts. So as soon as I moved out, I cut it. So she's like, looking back on that now, she's like, it definitely makes sense that you are who you are. And so I told her that day, I'm like, so this is my phone number. Whenever you want to call, because I can't be the one to reach out every time. I'm not going to be the one to reach out every time because I've been burned by my biological family on that. So if you want to talk to me, call me. It's been 6 years and I haven't gotten a call. So I'm like, okay. So, you know, I laid out the olive leaf and no one ever came. So, so yeah, with her, it was definitely, she wanted me to tell her that I forgave her, I think. So, when I told her that I had forgiven them a long time ago because I had to forgive them to move on myself, I think it was, she just needed to hear me say that I forgave, which is fine, you know, because like I said, I had moved on from them a long time ago. So it was fine if she really needed to hear that to live out the rest of her life happy. So yeah, that's my adoptive family.
And was it pretty much the same with your father and brothers, or did you have different relationships with them?
My baby brother was adopted like I was. I pretty much took care of him. My adoptive brothers were, when dad died, they didn't want me at the funeral. So they didn't tell me about dad's funeral until the day of the funeral. And I'm like, well, that's really shitty of you because, I mean, he was my dad too. No matter whether you wanted him to be or not, he was still my dad, you know, just like he was your dad. So, yeah, they didn't like me at all. And I don't know if it's because I was a black sheep and I went out on my own. And, you know, I joined the Marines and, you know, lived in California for 8 years and I actually got out, or it was just the fact that they are so bigoted, homophobic, that they just couldn't stand to see me. And the sad thing is that my older brother is a bigger fuck up than I am, excuse my language, but he's been a drug addict, he's been married I don't know how many times. I mean, so he's a bigger screw up than I am. Not that I screwed up. I mean, I'm just living my life, mm-hmm. You know, so, and screwed over the family, I don't know how many times, but I'm the one that's been shunned.
So you have no relationship with any of your brothers?
My adoptive brother, I talk to every once in a while.
Okay.
He keeps trying, but he's a little bit of a troublemaker, so I don't know if he's trying just to keep me in the drama or he truly wants me to be a part of his life. I can't figure it out. Mm-hmm. So I'll talk to him every once in a while. So, I mean, I'd say I probably have a relationship with him. It's just not a strong relationship. Okay. Yeah.
So I did want to ask about school. Like, what was school like growing up?
Like grade school and stuff?
Yeah, mostly grade school. I mean, you can also bring in college if you went to college and that kind of thing, but mostly, like, what was it like just growing up in school?
Yeah, I actually went to Ole Miss.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I got a bachelor's in criminal justice there.
Okay.
But school was... I was tomboy, didn't understand being gay or anything like that. So it was just, I was seen as a tomboy. Had crushes on girls, broke a guy's arm in first grade because he pushed down a girl that I liked. I was pretty... I liked school, so I tried to stay out of trouble in school. So, but high school was a little different. Well, actually before high school. So when I was 11, I went to a sleepover at a girl's house. Well, it was a set of twins. one of the girls I had a crush on. So went to the sleepover, and one of the other girls that was there, her and I went on a walk. And while we were out walking, she's like, "I think you're gay." I'm like, "What? I don't know what that means. We're 11. I don't know what that means." She's like, "That means you like girls and you don't like boys." I'm like, "Okay, well, I must be gay then, because, I mean, I don't like boys. I like girls." So I'm like, "Well, I must be gay then." So from then on, I knew my parents wouldn't accept it. So I pretty much hid. Tracy was probably the only person I talked to, because she was the one who told me that that's what it was. And she was from a wealthier family, so they had, you know, more access to more things than I had. So well, let me back up a little bit. So when I went, so before I got pulled out of my my home, or my, from my biological family, first and second grade, I'd started second grade before I got taken away. Or no, it was first grade. Anyway, so that was a little tougher because I was a poor, like, I mean, we had cracks in our walls. It snowed on us. It rained on us. We had hand-me-downs. My grandfather was an alcoholic, beat the shit out of my grandmother every time he came in the house. Never really touched us. He took it out, all out on our grandmother. But even back then, I knew I was different, you know, so I had a crush on my cousin because she was the only one, she was the only one I knew. You know, when you're 5 and 6, who you don't really hang out with a lot of people. Well, when you're really, really poor, you don't really hang out with a lot of people because you can't go anywhere. You can't afford to go anywhere. So her and I were like inseparable. And she, of course, she had little crushes on little boys and stuff at school. And, you know, I didn't know what to do. And first grade, that was when I had my first crush on a girl that wasn't my cousin, you know, hence the breaking the kid's arm and getting suspended. But I was always, always, always the tomboy. High school, I had best friends. They always just thought I was a tomboy. No one ever treated me differently because, I mean, I was the kind of person that I didn't care what your, you know, what your status in life was or what your parent status was. I didn't care. I was going to, like, if you're a good person, you're a good person. I don't care who you are. You know, so I had poor friends. I had middle-class friends. I had rich friends. You know, I hung out with everybody. I didn't really care who you were. I was the one who stood up for the kids being bullied that were coming into high school, you know, that the initiation that they can't do anymore. I was always the one to push people away and, you know, stand up for other people because no one ever stood up for me. Mm-hmm. So I was going to be that person. But no one ever really treated me any different or anything, because I was just, maybe it was because I was just so likable because I liked everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't a mean person or anything. And I was always very, very approachable. Even when I started coming out, I told people, just, if you have any questions, ask me. I will answer anything because I want you to understand, and I'd rather you get it from me than anyone else. Mm-hmm. So when I came out to my mom, actually I came out to my dad first, which is surprising, but I came out to my dad first. I was on Lackland Air Force Base in Texas, doing my MP training. And I was like, well, it's time for me to come out. I'm 19, it's time for me to come out. So I called, like, well, they can't kick me out because I'm already out. Because I knew what would happen if I had come out before. I would have been one of those kids that were homeless on the side of the street because they would have kicked me out. So I called my dad and told my dad, and he's like, well, your mom's going to be very disappointed. I'm like, okay, well, I'll talk to her, tell her to call me. She never called, but she wrote me that letter. Because dad told her when she was at church when I called, because, you know, God forbid the doors not, you know, be open, her not be there. So dad told her, and she wrote me that big long letter. It was about 4 pages. I still got it somewhere in my briefcase. I keep it just to remind me of, you know, kind of where I came from, and I don't want to be that person ever. So she wrote me this letter saying how I was going to burn in hell if I didn't change my ways, and how she was so glad that everyone knew that I wasn't theirs, that I was adopted, because she didn't want someone like me coming from her and all this other crap. And yeah, so that was pretty much growing up. I didn't have a bad with friends and stuff. I didn't really have bad experiences. It was mostly with the grown-ups, as they say. So,
and so did your dad, did he not really have a response to you coming out, or just
no, not really, which was weird too. He's like, well, your mom's just gonna be very disappointed. I think dad probably always kind of had an idea, because I mean, I was always such a damn tomboy. I mean, I would be the, even if mom put me in a skirt, I was still going to the top of the tree. I didn't care, you know. I was going to jump in a mud hole. I was going to play with the Tonga truck. I was going to play football or baseball or whatever, you know. So I think my dad kind of knew. I think that's why he didn't really have that much of a reaction. But mom's the one that had the big reaction, which I kind of expected from her, kind of. But she had just told me, reason why I decided to come out when I did, is that it was probably about a month before that, she had just told me, she's like, you know, you can talk to me about anything. She's like, just don't feel like you have to hide things. And I'm like, well, maybe she already knows. Maybe somebody said something to her from school or something. I think my friends knew. I think I lived with my best friend, you know, when I moved out, her and I moved in together. So I was like, well, maybe somebody said something to her, but nope, that was not what she was talking about. So I don't know what she was talking about, but it wasn't that. So, yeah.
Well, before we transition, and only because you alluded to it, do you have any memories of your biological family or any steel ties to them in any way?
Oh, yeah. Well, not anymore. But yes, I did. So I lived with, so at first I lived with my mom. My dad kidnapped me when I was 2. I lived with my dad from the time I was 2 to the time I was 5. My dad would bring me to see my grandparents because I was a daddy's girl. I loved my dad. And my dad would bring me to see my mom's parents, which was odd that they never told my mom where I was. Because my dad literally came and snagged me out of the yard when I was 2. And so when I was 5, my dad took me and I spent the day because my cousin was there. So my dad left me with my grandparents. So my grandmother got the bright idea to call my mom and said, hey, Mary Ann's here, you need to come get her. So she came and got me. I didn't know who the hell she was. I hadn't seen her since I was 2. I didn't know who she was. I was getting in a car with some creep who was going to take me somewhere and kill me or something. I didn't know who she was. So I went home with her, cried all night. She couldn't deal with it, so she took me back to my grandmother, my grandparents' house. And then my dad agreed to let me stay with my grandparents for a little while, so me and my mom could try to have a relationship, whatever. So I stayed with my grandparents, and they were dirt poor. I mean, like I said, the house was a rickety old shack, had cracks in the walls, and my grandfather was an alcoholic, so whatever money we had went down his gullet. He would come in drunk, throw everything out the back door, beat the shit out of grandma. He'd bring his drunk friends over, which they molested all of us. My cousin, my aunt, who was only 12 and 13 at the time that I was living with my grandparents. And her his drunk friends molested all of us. And when I was six, the welfare department picked us up from school. Me and my cousin picked us up from school. But even back then, I was always still a tomboy. You know, I ran around with no shoes. I was the butcher of the mall. I was a daredevil. I would do anything. But I also wanted to protect my cousin, so when we got picked up, I like tried to like keep her close to me. At first, they put us in the same foster home, and they told us that they wouldn't separate us, and they ended up separating us. But anyway, so that my biological family, after being in the foster homes for a while, I got my first job at a supermarket in Ripley, and so I grew up. Most of my life was spent in either Ripley or Faulkner, which is right there. So, which is where I went to like elementary school, high school. I graduated from Ripley. I'd been working at Griffin's, which now it's a different name, but I'd been working there for probably about a year to a year and a half. Started there right before I turned 16, and I worked there until I went into the Marines. And my everyone knew me. I went by Ann. I was started out as a bagger there, went to the back, did all other did various jobs. But somebody came in one time and said, "Hey, there's somebody up front that's looking for somebody named Marianne Smith," which was my biological name. So I'm like, "Who the hell would be coming in here looking for me by that name?" And I'm like, "Oh shit, I wonder if it's some of my family." So go up front, come to find out it's my baby sister and my aunt and one of my cousins. They had found me. They were like 20 minutes away. So we set up a time to go see them. I meet my mom. Flash forward a few years later, we had built a relationship. I came out as told them I was gay. They didn't have an issue with that. Tried to set me up on dates, you know, whatever. When I came out as trans, they didn't like that. My mom told me that my mom's words were, "Why can't you just stay the way you are?" My brothers really didn't have an opinion. One of them I had a decent relationship with, and the other one I didn't really have a relationship with, and they're twins. My middle sister, didn't really have a relationship with, but we still had a relationship. But my baby sister was the one I was closest to, because she was also gay. So we had built a pretty strong relationship. We hung out all the time. Even after I started transitioning, she's like, you should just be happy. She's like, come to find out later, her and her girlfriend both thought I was a freak. That came out later. Hence why I don't have a relationship with any of them anymore. But they also didn't like who I married. So my dad's reaction was, I don't want another son, because I was his only daughter. That was last time I actually spoke to my dad was about 8 years ago. The last time I talked to my mom was about 10 years ago or more. Well, actually it's been more, it's probably been more like 13, because I've been transitioning since 2005. Okay. So yeah.
Okay.
So I don't really have a relationship with any of them anymore. My mom and my dad, I just recently got back in contact with my dad, so we're going to see how that goes. He reached out to me. So we're going to see how that goes. I mean, I would love to have him be in my life and be a part of my life, because I love my dad, you know, even despite that, that was just him not understanding. So we'll see how it goes.
Okay.
That, because that just happened about 2 weeks ago.
Okay. Okay.
So we'll see how that goes. Yeah.
All right. Well, we can transition a little bit. I want to ask you, I know you said your adoptive mom was Pentecostal. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk a little bit about the role of religion in your life. Did it play a huge role in your life growing up at all?
Only while I was there. I did see, so the church I went to was the Blue Mountain Church of Jesus Christ. And we had a girl, so there's they have a children's home that's attached to the church. Well, it's not attached, it's down the road, but the church actually pays for the children's home. And they had a girl that came into the home because her mom was a drug addict. Her father was who knows where and who knows who. And she was a teenager about my age at the time. I think that was 13-ish, right around there. And Shannon and I became really close friends. You know, I would, after church, you know, on Sunday, you have the morning service, then you have the evening service. Well, I would go home with Shannon and we would hang out and we'd play cards and we'd just, you know, be friends, because she was also kind of masculine. So we kind of grew really close really quick. And she also like started playing drums for the church, and you know, it was very cool. It was good for her to get out of that situation, you know, with her mom. So come to find out, she was 16. I think she was a year older than me. So I would have been 15. The church threw out of the children's home. Her mom, they called her mom, and her mom said, I don't want her back. You guys took her, so she's your responsibility now. I don't want her. So what did the church do? Instead of doing the Christian thing, they threw a 16-year-old out on the street because she was gay. So yes, religion played a big part in why I didn't come out until later, when I was actually already out of the house. So it played a part in me holding off being honest and true to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And also played a big part on why I have a really strong dislike of not Christianity, but Christians, a lot of Christians. Especially in the South, they're very, very two-faced. Very, yeah, I'm going to live holy while I'm going to church, but when I'm out of church, I'm going to hate everybody who's not like me. And I've read the Bible a few times, and there's nothing in there about hating other people. It's about love. It's about compassion. It's, you know, love your neighbor and such and such. It's your gay neighbor, your Jew neighbor. It doesn't matter. We're all the same people, you know. And so for a long time, I hated anything to do with Christianity. I hated everyone because of that. Mm-hmm. And then Sue also helped me with that, my wife. She's like, you know, it's not really Christianity that you have a problem with. It's Christians. People who call themselves Christians and they're not Christians, because that's not what Christianity is about. So I'm like, yeah, you know, you're right. So I still don't go to church because I just don't. I'm just not a church person. It's just not. Even when I was a kid, I wasn't. I didn't want to be in church, you know. And I always believe that you don't have to sit in a church to live a good life and to live an honest and true life. So let's say I'm more spiritual than Christian. So.
Okay. Yeah. And that was going to be my next question. Like, how have you evolved as far as your relationship to religion or even spirituality?
Yeah. I don't really see, I'm not an atheist. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm more agnostic. I believe the Bible is a bunch of really nice stories, but it's 2000 years old. So, I mean, we have to evolve as people. So, and things change. And if there is a God, then he gave us this, he gave us science. So why do we not believe in science? He gave us all of these things that, you know, we can learn and grow as a species, and we're failing. So, yeah, I don't really have a relationship with Christianity. I have Christian friends, and I don't, you know, the woman who took me under her wing, as she calls herself, my mom now, you know, she's very Christian. Like, she is, like, super Christian, but she's like, we all have our own skeletons in our closet. She's like, who am I to tell you that you're living your life wrong? She's like, I love you no matter what. So that's what a mom should be,
yes.
You know, but, and I see her as a true Christian, because she doesn't hold anything against anyone else, because she knows she's got bad shit in her own closet. So, I don't really have a relationship with religion or anything anymore, I don't think, but I mean, I have evolved to not hate it anymore. So,
okay. So I'm glad you brought up this mother figure. I do want to know a little bit about her, and maybe how you all got connected. But so right now we're about to be at an hour. Do you still have a little more time? Because if you have something to do, we can just follow up on another day. Okay.
No, that's fine.
All right. So yes, can you tell me about her? You're the person that is now a mother figure for you.
Yep. So we actually started working together in the receiving department. She moved back to the receiving department. We started working together. We got even closer. And that was when I started coming out to my parents as transgender. No, it wasn't. Because I'd already started transition when I started Home Depot. Maybe it was when I started trying to repair. Sorry, it's been a while. It's been a while. I remember somebody, no, this was when I started trying to come out at work to all this, the associates and people at work. One of the women tried to actually hit Cheryl because she knew that me and Cheryl were friends, and she said something to Cheryl, and Cheryl took up for me. So they left work at the same time because they were on the same shift, and she literally tried to run Cheryl over in the parking lot. Like, Cheryl had to jump out of the way to have her not hit her. I'm like, holy shit. So Cheryl's telling me this out back, and I'm like, what? She's like, yeah, she tried to run over me because Cheryl didn't know at this time that I was transgender. This was a rumor that Faye had heard that I was transgender. So somebody had said something somewhere, or my brother had come in and started some shit, which he was, you know, he did a lot. This is why I said I don't know if he's trying to keep me as for, you know, drama. So that's when I actually told Cheryl, yes, it's true. Because Cheryl had told Faye, she's like, don't assume you know people. She's like, don't start stuff like that. If you don't know for a fact that it's true, why would you do that? Like, that's not what you do. Peyton is a good person. He's a nice guy. Why would you start shit like that? And then we were out back smoking. This is when we smoked pretty heavily. We were out back smoking, and I'm like, Cheryl, she's actually right. I am transgender. And Cheryl's like, I don't give a shit who you are. She's like, I love you no matter what. I don't care. And she came over. She hugged me. She's like, so since your parents decided that they didn't want you, I'm taking you as my son. And I'm like, wow. So we started getting really close. We'd hang out. I'd go to her house. She'd come to my house. She'd come over and sit with Radcliffe, our dog at the time. When we would want to go on, you know, take a weekend trip or something just to get away. I'd go over and spend the weekend, you know, not the weekend, but I'd go over and spend the day with her, you know, just hanging out, talking, watching football. And it just became, we still talk, you know, she'll text me a kissy faces every once in a while saying, love you, son. And I text her on Mother's Day and on her birthday. And so, I mean, it's a good relationship knowing that I have her there, since I don't have anyone else, you know. I don't have to have a mother figure, but it's nice to know that Cheryl's there.
Well, can you talk a little bit about, I know you said you went to college here. Mm-hmm. So can you, let's talk about that. How was going to school here at University of Mississippi?
I actually went to the Tupelo campus.
Okay.
Yeah, I went to the Tupelo campus because my entire program was right there. So I could go to work and go straight to school and not have to drive an hour to go to school. I don't know if you've been to the Tupelo campus, but it's very small.
Okay.
I never came out to anyone there, so no one ever knew.
Okay.
Even though I was doing the talking at at the Oxford campus, I never told anyone there. So no one ever knew. So it was fine going. I think it would have been different if I'd have gone to the Oxford campus because there was more people there. There were transgender people that went, you know, there were the P flag, there was the LGBT groups and stuff. So I think it would have been a little different if I'd have gone to the Oxford group. I probably would have gotten more involved with, you know, some of the stuff there. I did serve on a couple of panels. After I graduated, I did serve on a couple of panels there for, I don't remember what it was for. I don't remember what it was for, but somebody reached out and asked me to be a part of a panel. And they had me, they asked Sue, because Sue actually identifies as bi. Mm-hmm. So they asked me, her, and they were trying to get somebody from each one of the spectrum, the LGBT. They were trying to get somebody from all of it. Mm-hmm. So, and we allowed people to ask questions and stuff like that to kind of, again, educate.
Okay.
So going to school there was not, it was pretty boring. It's pretty boring. Although I did get to, you know, get in contact with some good people there, like Amy. and stuff. And I also talked to a psychology teacher there who I actually did a speaking engagement for as well, but I cannot remember her name. But she was a psychology professor.
Okay. So when did you first start meeting other folks? And I know you mentioned a few people, but when did you start kind of meeting people that share your identity and experiences? Like, what was that like?
The first one was actually in Memphis when we went to that group. She was very open and very, very cool for me to talk to. 'Cause I mean, I asked questions. I'm like, even though I'm also a little bit different when it comes to being transgender, not everybody that's FTM likes people who are MTF, and you know, they don't see themselves doing the same thing. I'm like, we're doing the same thing. We're transitioning from our birth sex into our true sex, what we want to be, what we were truly born to be. So we're going opposite directions, but guess what? We're still doing the same damn thing. So we're going through the same hardships, you know, the same. It's easier for us as FTMs to hide in the first year because guess what? Testosterone is very powerful. And in the first year, usually you can pass. Takes a long time to be able to grow like a full beard and everything, but you've got peach fuzz and you know your voice has changed. For MTFs, it's a totally different thing. They have to go the opposite direction with the T. They have to scrape their Adam's apple. They have to have feminization done on their face before they have to have electrolysis. I'm like, so we're going through similar challenges, but they have a rougher time. But anyway, sorry about that little tangent, because
That's fine.
that just irritates the piss out of me that they don't see that we're doing the same thing. We're just going in opposite directions. And I think that's what divides the LGBT community is because there's people outside don't have to hate us because we hate ourselves. And it irritates me. Anyway, so talking to her was very eye-opening, that it could be done, that it was possible for me to become male, which is where I felt like always felt like I should be. After I met her, well, actually, I can't say she was the first one because I did live in California and I did go to Pride out there. Every year we'd go to Pride, so I did see transgender people, but I didn't realize. I thought they were drag queens and just very masculine women, so I didn't realize then that they were transgender until I looked back. But she was probably the first one I talked to, and it was just very, very cool to talk to someone who said, yeah, you know, as far back as I can remember, I felt like the opposite sex. I felt like the body that I was given was not the one it should have been, you know, so just never felt comfortable in the body. That was very cool. And then Mel, the guy who I actually transitioned with, he started testosterone in June, and I started testosterone in October. So him and I are kind of like brothers. We still talk every once in a while. We kind of fell out of touch because he's kind of a douchebag. But we kind of fell out of touch. Before him and I started, there was another guy who got in touch with us that was from Mississippi who lived in Kentucky, who I think his, I don't remember how we got in touch, but he got in touch with me. And he had been transitioning for 2 years. He is a real fucking douchebag, excuse my language, but he's one of those trans guys who think they have to grab their crotch and their bitch has to be sitting next to him, you know, and he has to carry a gun, he has to hunt, he has to drink, he has, you know, he thinks that that's masculinity. And I tried to tell him that that's toxic masculinity. That's not masculinity. You decide what kind of man you want to be. You decide. not the world, not society, you. You decide what kind of man you want to be. And don't fall into the same bullshit that every other Southern man thinks redneck. Let me say not every other Southern man, because not all Southern men are like that. But every redneck that comes out of those woods think that they're a hillbilly that needs to fight, they need to drink, they need to hunt to be a man. And that's just not what being a man is about. Mm-hmm. So him and I pretty much split ways when, well, first he was trying to tell everyone he was a Marine. I'm like, I earned that title. You did not. Him and I got into a fight, argument about that. I told him if I ever heard he was calling himself a Marine again, I was going to personally come down and kick his ass. Mm-hmm. But he thought that I took another friend's side over his side. He's like, that's not loyalty. And I'm like, it doesn't matter. We're all friends. I'm not taking sides. But anyway, so he was the second one I actually talked to. He ended up being just a bad. He gave me my first tee shot. Mm-hmm. Because I thought, because he had already transitioned, you know, that he knew what he was doing and he was a good person that I could talk to and say, okay, you know, this is what I'm going through. You know, is this normal? That lasted for about a year after he gave me my first shot, a year into transition. I'm like, okay, yeah, we're done. We're done. So I started getting online and getting into groups and all that stuff. Didn't really meet a lot of trans people in the South, but I did help a lot of trans people transition because I had done the research. I knew therapists, I knew doctors because of, you know, all the research I had done. So I became an advocate for other people that transition. You know, I had people reaching out to me that I'd never met before saying, hey, you know, so-and-so said that you're a good person to get with to, you know, for doctors and stuff and for just for me to ask questions and make sure this is what I want to do. You know, this is who I am. So I did help a lot of guys actually get stuff. And I talked to a couple of MTFs as well who were struggling with their identity. So I think I went from toddler to parent very quickly mm-hmm. In my transition. So yeah, sorry, got off on a little tangent there.
No, it's okay. And I actually, because it's always so many interesting things that'll come up. And so can you talk about the Marines? Because I was like, okay, yeah. This has come up and you would say something else. And I was like, no, I got to ask about that. But what about the Marines? How was your experience with that?
So the Marines was almost got kicked out for being gay. So when I went in in 89, and back then on the enlistment paperwork, it asked if you were gay. And I had to say no, cause I wanted to serve my country. So I said no. Went in, didn't really have any issues, and in peace school, when I got to my permanent duty station in 29 Palms in Southern California, I was actually barracked with two other girls, and I had met at one of the prides I went to, I had met this chick that I had pretty much fallen head over heels in love with. So she ended up moving. I talked her into moving down with me. And the girls actually caught us sleeping, not doing anything. We were just literally sleeping in the same bed. Now, if you've ever seen a military bed, but it's literally just a twin bed. That's what you get to sleep in. So, We were sleeping in the same bed. They came in and caught us. So they actually went to the provost marshal, told the provost marshal that they thought I was gay, that I had hit on them, and that all this other just dumb bullshit. So the provost marshal calls me in and says, you know, this is what's been brought against you. These are the accusations. These are, you know, so this is what's going on. So I'm like, okay. So because I had another woman sleeping next to me, girlfriends do that all the time, no matter if you're straight or not. Girlfriends do that. They always, you know, comfort. So I had to play that off and told him, no, I've got a, you know, I'm dating someone. I'm not, she's a friend who's at a, was in a hard time. We had gone to the E-Club the night before, so I had been drinking. She had been drinking. We went back to the barracks, and I had snuck her in because my two girl roommates were not there. I don't know where they were staying, but they hadn't been staying there in a while. They just happened to come home that time. So I played it off to him. Then he had the deputy provost marshal, which was like right under him, actually talked to me, asked the same questions. I had the same responses that, you know, I don't know where that came from. I never hit on them. And even if I was gay, I wouldn't have, they're not my type, you know, because they were both bitches. So that's just not my type. And I kind of made a joke of it. And by the end of it, he's like, okay. He's like, I don't really, maybe they just don't like you for some reason. I'm like, I don't know what the deal is. I don't know where this freaking came from. I'm like, but her and I were at the club the night before. We were at the E Club drinking. I didn't want her to drive. And we didn't have money for a cab for me to send her off base. So we went back to the room and we were laying in the bed talking. And we both fell asleep. That's what happened. And that actually is what happened. But I mean, I was like, that's what happened. So it's not like she's my girlfriend. We weren't naked in the bed together. And they walked in on us. We were fully closed. So I don't know where the hell this is coming from. So I played all that off. And then probably about 6 months after that, I was trying to play the straight card while I was at, you know, while I was in. Met this guy. He was actually a sergeant. I was a lance corporal. We started hanging out, became really close friends, dating. We were dating, and all of a sudden I'm like, you know what? I can't do this. I'm like, I came out to him. I told him I'm gay. He's like, probably shouldn't be doing that. He's like, because I'm a sergeant. I'm like, yes, but we're dating, so yes, because you could also get court-martialed for dating someone who's three ranks below you, or two ranks below you, because I was a lance corporal, he was a sergeant. And I was like, so yeah, you could get in trouble too, so you could hold my secret. So came out to him. After that, he actually tried to rape me. Didn't succeed because I kicked him in the balls, but he tried. Because I don't know if he was upset that, you know, we had been dating and I just now told him that I was gay. He started thinking about it and got upset about it. I don't know what to do. Was because I thought we were just going to be buddies and hang out. So I went to his barracks and we were watching television and the fucking shit hit the fan. So then, I mean, after all that settled, it was just a normal, I moved off base. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have, wasn't at, in the normal base crap anymore. Moved off base, actually moved in with my girlfriend, and actually the guy before the sergeant that I tried to date, before I actually met Stephanie, the girl I met, me and Mitchell had been dating, and then, you know, I told Mitchell, and it broke his heart because I think he was in love with me. So he had his girlfriend, so it was basically a two-bedroom house off of base. And me and Steph was in one room, he was in the other with his girlfriends. It was just a happy little off-base family.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, I really didn't have any issues on base because I wasn't in military space. When I was off base, I was in my own damn space. So,
okay. Yeah, it's interesting. So was it illegal or something during the time that you were serving? Like, what was the issue with you? Oh, it was?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. You were not allowed to serve military if you were gay. That was literally on the application. Are you gay?
And what, can you give me the time frame you served?
So I served from 89 to 92.
Okay, that makes sense. I think I'm over here underestimating the time range. I was like, is this in the 2000s that this was happening? No. That sounds not right, but 80s, that sounds...
Yeah, right. 89 to 92. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why I almost got kicked out.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Okay. Well, to transition to some happier things, I actually wanted to ask you, could you talk a little bit about meeting Sue, your wife?
Sure. We actually met online on gay.com way back when. And there were little chat rooms in there. I had just broken up with my girlfriend, who we were still living together, but I lived upstairs. She lived downstairs in the same house. And I got online, was checking around. I'm like, you know, I've been single for a little bit, so, you know, I want to start dating again. So I got online, started poking around. I'm like, oh, gay.com, what's that? So I got on, checked out some chat rooms and stuff, and I went into a femme butch room because at that time I was just a butch. When butches came into the room, usually the femmes would come over and start chatting with them and stuff. So I think back then I went by, I think I went by Harley.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in there, and then all of a sudden I'd been in and out of the chat rooms for probably a week or 2 weeks. And then all of a sudden this chick walks up to me, violent femme. And I'm like, okay. So we started chatting, and she started saying, you know, sitting on your lap, you know, kissing your head, you know, whatever. So I'm like, okay. So I told her, I was like, we should meet. Why don't we meet? This was on October 28th that we met online.
Mm-hmm.
The 29th, we had planned on meeting. We've been together ever since.
Wow.
So October 29th, 2000. And I would drive from Tupelo to Columbus almost every day to see her. Weekends, because at the time I was actually working for the Walmart DC in New Albany. So I would have weekends off. I would drive down there. I'd spend the weekend with her. I'd get up. Sometimes I'd call in on Monday because I'm like, I want to be here with you. You know, so I'd call saying I had car trouble or something, you know, some dumb excuse to just stay there with her. And then we were together for about a month, and we moved in together with my sister and her cunt girlfriend. And we've just been together ever since. I mean, we've been through a lot of shit, especially with my family. We've been through a lot of stuff in 20 years. We just celebrated 20 years this past October. So,
okay. Did you all have any issues with getting married, with you being trans?
So I transitioned in 2005. I didn't actually legally change to male until 2000. It's only been about 10 years.
Okay.
Because there was no way for me to change genders.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not having bottom surgery ever. Just mm-hmm. don't. That's just not for me. I don't need a dick to make me a man. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just going to be me. So when the U.S. passports came out as saying you don't have to have surgery to actually get your gender changed, that's the route I went, because I was born in Tennessee. I was born in Memphis, so Tennessee still won't change a birth certificate. So I'm still stuck with my birth certificate having my Marianne Gates on it and female.
Okay.
So because I can't change my birth certificate because Tennessee won't do it. And so I sent in letters from my doctor, who had been seeing me since I started transitioning, sent in a letter from my psychologist, my therapist, and all the information I needed to the passport office, got my gender changed to male. And then we got married. So no one had any questions about it. I'm like, when they ask for a birth certificate, I'm like, I don't have my birth certificate, but here's my passport.
Okay.
So, because passports that will stand in for birth certificate. So I'm like, I have my passport. So, that's how I got everything changed. That's how we got our license. That's how we got married, you know, so we were just seen as a normal male, female couple. So we didn't really have any issues getting married or anything.
Okay.
So.
And what year did you all get married?
We got married in 2012.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, one of the other things I wanted to ask you about, and this doesn't have to be exclusive to Mississippi, though I want to know about places in Mississippi. What are some like main, you know, LGBTQ spots that you hung out in, or even now, or when you were like in college, that kind of thing?
So I would say probably the P flag there was the biggest support. Like we would drive to Oxford every month to go to the meetings.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a big help for me to be around other LGBT anyone, you know, just to feel a little bit of family, you know, to feel comfort. So we would drive to the Oxford until we found out that there was actually a P flag in Tupelo. And then once we found out there was a P flag in Tupelo, I would go to the P flag every month and just hang out and talk and, you know, go to their events and, you know, whatever was going on. So I would say probably the P flag was the biggest thing. I got a little bit involved with HRC. I did the, what was it? It was the No Hate campaign, I think is what it was. I did a video for them. Kind of telling my story, transition in the South and all that stuff. So I did that for the HRC, for Rob Hill. And we still stay in contact. Before I left, we were going to do, he wanted me to come to Jackson and actually talk to some people. And unfortunately, I didn't get to do that before I moved to New York, which I really hate because he's doing a lot of good things down there for LGBT everyone. So I'd say probably the HRC and the P flag are the two main. The P flag was my main support. It was my main out. If I ever needed to talk about anything, any kind of hate, even though Amanda is straight, she's still a very, very big ally for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's one of those people that will she'll kick your ass for saying something bad about any of us. You know, she will go into mother hen mode. So PFLAG's probably the number one. And I hate that more people don't get out and go to the PFLAG, because it's not just, I think because of the name, people see it as it's just for family. And it's not just for family, you know, or friends, you know, because it's, you know, family and friends type of thing, but it's for everyone. So.
Man, there's multiple things I was going to follow up about. So those particular spaces, I was also wondering about social spaces like bars or clubs, hangout spots that you maybe just go to like unwind. Were there any of those that were like LGBTQ safe or just specifically for LGBT folks?
No, I mean, Rumors before, Rumors was in, God, what was that little town? Aberdeen. Was it in Aberdeen? I think it was in that. No, it was in Shannon. So Rumors was a little hole in the wall, little bitty tiny ass bar that we would go to watch the drag show or anything. That when Rumors closed, there was a little club in Tupelo that tried to open up. I think it was Dr. Loves or something like that. He would do drag shows and open it up to LGBT like once or twice a month. So I'd go there every once in a while, but for the most part, I really didn't go to bars and clubs and stuff. I did when I lived in California when I was younger, but in Mississippi, not really, because it was not a lot of, cops would literally sit outside the bar and wait for us to leave, hoping they would catch one of us doing something. They would literally set, because the bar was like in a curve and there were stop signs. There was, it was like basically a three-way stop, and the club was like right in the corner there. They would literally sit across the street and watch. Just waiting on one of us faggots to do something so that they could beat the shit out of us or do whatever they wanted to do. I did get pulled over a few times because my little car was held together by pride stickers, and I didn't care, you know, because I was just very, I'm like, I'm gonna be me and I don't care if you don't like me, you know, I'm not living my life for you. So I'd put whatever I wanted to on my cards, and I would get pulled over, I would get called, I got chased on the highway coming down 78, got chased. God, we got chased probably 4 or 5 miles. Then the assholes passed us, and about 2 miles ahead, they had got pulled over by a cop. I'm like, see, you little dick, that's what you get, chasing us. And they would come over, they would yell at us, and then they would pull back, and then they would come around, they'd yell at us, and they'd go faster, and it'd slow down, and they'd yell at us, which terrified. Sue was with me, so I mean, it terrified her because she's femme, so I mean, she's never really seen that part before. I'm like, I'm butch. I've seen people have spit on me on sidewalks. I mean, because of who I am, people have chased in California. I got chased 20 miles by a truck full of rednecks, which was surprising in California, but they literally chased me 20 miles until I got fed up with it and pulled off and said, "Come on. If you're going to do something, do it, because I'm tired of being afraid." And of course, they sped off. So, I mean, I've been at stoplights, kids have thrown stuff at my car. I mean, so I've had a lot of shit happen to me as because of who I was. So I ain't scared of people.
I hear that. Well, where you currently live, are you, I know you talked a little bit about it, but are you what do you have any, like, what you'd call like your core community of friends, and are they like just a mix of straight and LGBT folks, or is it mostly LGBT folks?
Well, we weren't here for a long time before COVID hit. So we really didn't get to get out very much. So I didn't really get a chance to actually meet a whole lot of people in the LGBT community. I do still talk. I do talk to a guy. We met for coffee before COVID hit, and then after COVID hit, we haven't been able. We still like we'll talk on the phone or we'll text back and forth. We're on Facebook, so we'll chat on Facebook. So he's trans. And there's a couple other guys that I've kind of talked to online that are from here. So I'm hoping once COVID is over to maybe kind of get, because in Rochester they actually had what they called Guys Night Out, where the trans guys got together, they went out, had a beer, hung out, played a game. You know, there was a little coffee shop there that was actually owned by two lesbians. But it was a safe space for anyone LGBT. It was a little coffee shop, awesome flags in the windows. You know, it was very cool to go somewhere and see just the windows aren't busted out because they have a pride flag out front. You know, so that was very cool to see. So I'm hoping to do that here, kind of get something started here where we can get some guys, you know, young guys involved, and see if we can't get a kind of a community built that way. And I'm going to try to get out with, there's a group here called Out Minnesota, and they do a lot of community outreach and stuff, and a lot of programs for like youth LGBT. So I'm hoping to get involved with them as well.
Well,
COVID's hindering
yes,
a
it's been a lot. So
lot.
one of the final questions I wanted to ask was, even though you don't live here anymore, what has been some of the biggest changes that you've seen in Mississippi or that you observed just from the time that you were coming of age up until now?
I would say probably Mississippi is not as backwards as a lot of people think it is. If you talk to people and you talk to people in the right way, they will listen. And that's kind of what I've seen. Mississippi has grown. You know, they have a long way to go, but it has grown because people are starting to come to the table to talk. They are willing to listen and to hear stories and to actually talk about the hardships of us. So I think it's becoming easier for LGBT to be in the open and be out. And I hate the fact that I can hide. Even though I don't, because I tell just about everyone, because I don't want them to see me as a normal guy, because I'm not a normal guy. So I would say in Mississippi, in the South, more people are becoming more willing to open up and listen and hear what we have to say, no matter where you are. And like I said, there is still a long way to go, but they are getting there. So that makes me very proud.
Well, before we end, did you have anything else you'd like to discuss or share just about the interview or just some thoughts that came to mind as we were kind of talking about everything?
Not really. I appreciate you doing this. It's pretty awesome. I really hate that it took me so long. Life just, we bought a house and then we got puppies and then holy crap. So I really apologize that it took me so long to get back in touch with you. But thank you for doing this, because this is pretty awesome that someone's taking the time to actually talk to people of the LGBT community and getting our stories and getting it, having it be a part of Mississippi history. So it's pretty awesome. Thank you.
All right, well, thank you. And I'm going to stop recording and talk to you for just a minute.